Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition, I'm very proud to say, is the author of Midnight in Mexico, Alfredo Corchado, A Reporter's Journey Through a Country's Descent into Darkness, which was published last year. And with editor Lauren Villagran, she is the Border Bureau Chief of the Albuquerque Journal. Corchado is the Mexico Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News, and for more than 20 years has lived on both sides of the border reporting on the drug violence in Mexico. He was born in Durango, Mexico, and grew up in California and Texas, and is a graduate from UTEP, University of Texas, El Paso. Thank you for joining me again on Puentes.
It's my pleasure. Great to be here, especially with Lauren this afternoon.
You'll have to tell me about Lauren, how she's involved with the book.
Well, I'd be happy to. I always tell people that if you want to write a book, you need two Argentinians, a Swede, and a New Yorker. The Argentinians sort of help you believe in yourself. They help you build the confidence. But you can believe all you want. I mean, you need a New Yorker to establish discipline, help you with discipline, and just sit there next to you and push you away from the silence. In my case, as a reporter, and actually try to write a memoir, which is the most difficult thing I've ever done. But I'm a very lucky man that Lauren was there and has been there from day one.
Thanks, Alfredo.
And how challenging was that for you, Lauren?
Well, you know, Alfredo's a fantastic reporter, and it really is a very different exercise to be writing a memoir, to write about your personal story. And I think that was a challenge. I think that's a challenge for all journalists. It was a real blessing to sort of watch that side of Alfredo as a journalist come out, being able to sort of tell that personal tale, which is so important to the book, and I think to the book's success.
You two met in Mexico?
We met in Mexico just as I had gotten the contract from Penguin to write the book. And I met her at a very critical time when I was about to throw in the towel and say, I can't write a book. And Lauren just appeared. You know, magical things happen in Mexico City. And Lauren is one of these magical human beings that came in. We're sitting down, and she was actually doing an interview about me for a publication in El Paso. And then it turned out that she also wrote books. So I just looked at her and I thought, wow, this is meant to be.
Well, it turns out you can't just be a freelance journalist. You really have to do a lot of different kind of work in order to make it. And I was a freelance journalist for 6 years in Mexico City. And when I met Alfredo, I was also writing book proposals, ghostwriting books, and also editing books. And so we were able to work on the book proposal together. And then that just evolved into an editing relationship in which we were able to work together for 2 years on developing the narrative for this story.
What has been the most significant thing about the book to you, Alfredo?
The last time we talked, we focused a lot on music, and I did a lot of interviews last year, but this was one of the most memorable ones. Sitting here with you right at a time when I didn't know where the book was going, what was going to happen, but I remember that show so vividly. You know what was amazing about that night? That I put the link, and people from Mexico City were following it. I sent it to Marcela, I sent it to Alejandra, and all of a sudden, they're sharing it with other people, and they're saying, escuchen esto, this is playing now, it's live, blah, blah, and that was incredible. And I remember running into my mom's bedroom and saying, you got to wake up, you got to wake up. Emily's playing with Juan Gabriel, Javier Solís. So that night was one of the most memorable experiences. And there's been so many more. I think I was worried that at some point I was going to lose it. I was going to cry because it's also a very emotional thing. I mean, one thing is spending all this time locked in your room or at a coffee place writing the book. And it's a relationship between you, yourself, oftentimes Lauren, oftentimes your keyboard, the skylight in Mexico City or in El Paso, different places on both sides of the border. But going out in public and meeting people, it's quite a different experience. I mean, it's exhilarating. It's also exhausting. There was one particular time in Northern California. I mean, as you said earlier, I grew up in California and being in a place called Sebastopol, California. I mean, I remember I walked in with Angela, my significant other, also a journalist colleague. We walked into this place. It was a bookstore, and no one was there. And we thought, oh, my God, every author is going to experience this, you know, when you walk in and no one is there. And the manager said, why don't you guys go out and get a cup of coffee or tea and come back? The radio got the wrong address, the wrong place. But we're hoping to get a few people back. We get back half an hour later, and the room was packed. And during that half an hour, I had decided, okay, nothing's going to happen. We're not going to really give a talk. I'll just maybe sign some books. But I think it all happened spontaneously. And then next thing I know, I start crying. Because, I mean, you're back in California, a place where you grew up, you know, you worked in the fields, and suddenly you're there to present a book. That was incredibly emotional. I think the other one that really sticks out in my mind was in Mexico City, in Colonia La Roma. And, you know, when I wrote this book, I never thought it would be of interest to a Mexican publisher or to a Mexican audience. But sitting there with the actor Diego Luna, the producer Pablo Cruz, my editor in Mexico City, Cristobal Pera, was an amazing experience. I mean, the book, the movie rights were option, bought by Canana. And that was really, really significant.
Well, let's go back before we get to the movie rights. The book became translated in Spanish. That happened October of last year?
Yeah, it came out in October of last year. It was translated during the summertime. It was supposed to come out at the beginning of the year, and they decided to do it earlier. Again, you know, that was a shocking experience. I mean, it was shocking, but it was also incredibly, incredibly humbling because this is your country. This is, you know, you write a book about your love for your homeland, and you're always afraid of being rejected by your homeland.
But being more than just the love of your homeland, a memoir about yourself, you experienced, as a journalist in Mexico, the drug cartels, violence even upon yourself.
I wouldn't say it was violence against me. I mean, it was a threat, maybe 3-4 threats against me, and I describe them in the book. And I would say nothing compared to what a colleague in Mexico faces. But I always tell people, you know, if you want to pick up Midnight in Mexico and read it, and you're expecting to get the policy or the analysis of what happened in Mexico about the drug war, you will probably be disappointed. And I always say that the drug war, the drug violence was the backdrop of this book. I think the heart and soul is really a journey. And it's the journey of looking for your identity, looking for where do you belong. It's a confession from a son to a mother and saying, this is what's happened to our beloved country, you know, and this is why it happened. So it's looking to sort of reinvent yourself. Or there was a Mexican author who just said, nos está reivindicando, as someone who left Mexico and someone who comes back, and you're embracing both sides. In some ways, you're a bridge between two countries.
So here you are, a bridge to the whole world, actually, because you've just come back from Argentina. You were in Norway. Tell us more about these experiences that have brought you to a different world.
It certainly is a different world. I mean, and now that the book is out in paperback, I mean, it came out in paperback last week. I'm hopeful that more people will read it. More, you know, it's much more affordable. You want to hit more of an audience. But, you know, it was certainly very surprising to get a call and say, we want you in Norway. And I hesitated because who wants to go to Norway in February when it's incredibly cold? But I showed up and it was 3 different events. Every event, there was more than 100 people. And it was fascinating to see that kind of interest, not just in Norway, but I mean, across the United States, but obviously Norway is different. And then last week, being in Argentina, and the Argentinians are concerned that there were signs, there were, you know, faint signs at this point that Argentina may be headed Mexico's way. I don't think it's there, but I do applaud them for trying to take measures now and try to protect journalists, trying to see what the signs are so that they don't create or make the same mistakes that Mexico has made.
So how did Norway receive you? What were some of the questions that you got in Norway?
You know, it's interesting. Oftentimes, I think people always kind of focus in on the issue of legalization. If the United States, if the world was to legalize illegal drugs, you know, would that solve the problem? And that's something that's always there, whether it's Dallas, whether it's Las Cruces, El Paso, California. It's always focused on that. And I would tell people, yes, you know, that would really help a lot. It would help a long ways. But can you also legalize extortion? Can you also legalize kidnappings? It's more than illicit drugs. It's about rule of law. And if there's one thing that I think during the writing of the book, during the reporting for the Dallas Morning News, and since the book's come out, if there's one thing that always encouraged me about Mexicans, my countrymen, is that they understand that they also have to take responsibility for a lot of Mexico's ills.
And in Argentina, they wanted them to compare it with Mexico?
There's a place outside of Buenos Aires called Rosario, where they've experienced some drug violence in the last year or so. And there's been connections to some of the Mexican cartels, which is not surprising. I mean, they're not really Mexican cartels. I mean, they're international cartels, drug trafficking organizations. So they're interested in knowing what Mexico has done wrong, what Mexico has done right. How do you protect journalists? How do you know that the signs are there? And I talked a lot about impunity. Mexico, the impunity rate is more than 95%. In other words, more than 95% of crimes, homicides, go unsolved. And you can't really move forward when you live in a country like that. So I talked about the importance of, again, strengthening the rule of law and trying to build community. I mean, forming a community. And for journalism colleagues, building much more solidarity with their own colleagues. Having editors take much more responsibility for their reporters. You know, in Mexico, oftentimes reporters have no life insurance, very, very poorly paid. Oftentimes they travel to regions that are very dangerous, and they have no one really watching their back. So, I mean, there's a lot of things for Argentinians or journalists throughout Latin America to learn from Mexico.
Now, there are a few journalists here in the United States that are in exile from Mexico. Have you had a chance to meet any of them and talk about their experiences?
Yes. I mean, I not only talked to them, but I've interviewed them. I've done stories on colleagues. This region, El Paso, Las Cruces, has become a hotspot for a lot of them. I mean, it's the closeness to it, the region. Journalists from Chihuahua, journalists from Coahuila. Yes, I mean, it's a terrible experience for them, but also for the communities, because what happens is that in the end, these communities, the silence grows. Some journalists, some of my colleagues in Mexico, have decided that there's not enough protection for them. There's no guarantee of freedom of expression from the government. So you often find regions where people have, I mean, they've chosen to censor themselves. And I'll be going to some of these regions this week, you know, for example, Nuevo León, parts of Nuevo León, parts of Tamaulipas, where it's hard to know what's going on the ground because you can't really pick up the newspaper and say, oh, you know, this is happening or that's happening. And oftentimes you look at social media to get a sense, but that's also dangerous because organized crime, drug trafficking organizations, they're pretty sophisticated. So oftentimes they use social media to promote one thing over the other, you know, to promote a certain message. So, for example, in Tamaulipas, it's back in the news. There's been a lot of news in social media in Tampico saying, please don't go out this week because there's going to be lots of killing. So oftentimes you have people who will stay home. It impacts merchants. It impacts the entire community. I mean, children stop going to school. So you have to be really careful what to believe in, who to talk to. And it comes at a time when the Mexican president is trying to change the narrative of the country. There are places in Mexico where there's much more prosperity. They're much more prosperous. And they like to maybe focus on that narrative. But I think in the end, it still comes back to security. And security, while it has gotten better in places like Ciudad Juarez and others, I mean, it's still very much, I think, a big topic of concern for a lot of Mexicans.
Do you feel concerned for yourself? Any fear about going out to reporting now that it's become dangerous again? And what about you going into bookstores in Mexico promoting your book?
Well, I've been very limited in the kinds of promotions I do in Mexico. I've done some events in Guadalajara and in Mexico City. I haven't really decided other cities to do. And yes, I'm always concerned. And it's kind of funny. Sometimes I'm more concerned when I'm on the U.S. side and you look back and you think of Mexico and you become, should I go back, this and that. I mean, I think it happens to a lot of Americans. But once I'm in Mexico City, it's like the chip turns in your head and it's like you're back in your element and you do certain things that you wouldn't do in the U.S. But again, I mean, I always stress it's nothing compared to what my colleagues in Mexico face. I mean, I can always call my editor in Dallas and say, you know what, this is crazy, this is dangerous, I don't feel safe. And he'll say, get on the next flight. I don't know how you feel about that, Lauren.
Well, you know, I completely agree. I mean, obviously, our Mexican colleagues face a lot more security issues. But that's one thing about the book that's so interesting. You know, you've talked about impunity, you've talked about security, the issues that you face reporting. And I think when you look at your personal journey of trying to understand your identity as a Mexican and as an American, both Mexico and the U.S. as nations are also kind of exploring their identities today and the way that their identities are changing and who they want to be or who we're going to be as nations and as neighbors.
You know, that's interesting because I find it fascinating when I'm in the U.S. and what people focus on. you know, the audiences, how the audiences differ. And then in the United States, there's always much more interest in the search for identity, in who we are. I mean, there are 35 million Americans who trace their roots back to Mexico. But beyond that, I mean, there are millions of Americans who love traveling to Mexico. They love the food. They love the music. They love all, you know, these beautiful places. That's Mexico. And I think there's always that sense of curiosity, you know, what is Mexico? Who is Mexico? And are we becoming more and more Mexican as an American society? Whereas in Mexico, I think there's still a lot of fascination with what happened to us. How do we become a country of drug violence? I mean, I remember years ago when you would make even the slightest comparison to Mexico to Colombia, Mexicans felt that was beneath them. You know, they didn't want to go there. I myself, I didn't want to cover drug violence. To me, it was always La Nota Roja, the police beat kind of deal. But I think Mexicans are coming to this realization that this is not just a border region. I mean, it's Mexico City. It's other big regions. So there's always that fascination. When I've done talks in Mexico, it's not just the drug violence, but also how do you Americans see us? And I always find that fascinating because I don't know that I'm that American or that Mexican. I'm kind of in between.
So you feel like you're not in both worlds.
I always tell the person interviewing me, what do you mean? As an American, as a Mexican? And they look at me and says, no, obviously as an American. I say, well, you know, sometimes that I always feel like I'm more American in Mexico and much more Mexican in Las Cruces or in El Paso or anywhere in the United States. Don't you find that?
I would say that's true, although coming back to the music idea, I can definitely say that Alfredo writes best with Mexican music. So whatever that says about your personality,
I
don't know.
One of the incredible things about Lauren was being able to listen to Juan Gabriel 50, 60 consecutive times, one song. I mean, it would just go on and on because once you felt that magic, it would just go on and on. And there were times that Lauren would say, okay, you're in your zone. I'm leaving. Goodbye. And I wouldn't even really notice that she was gone.
What song especially sticks out in your mind, Lauren?
Juan Gabriel, Así Fue. Definitely. There's a long list, and you know that list. You've played that list before, but I would definitely say that Juan Gabriel, being from Juarez, was a very important part of the writing of this book.
Anytime I felt like I had writer's block, I think Lauren would kind of encourage me to turn Juan Gabriel on and see if there was enough magic there.
It's no joke. The music is a big deal.
Well, now that the book is in paperback, it's in Spanish. Is it in Spanish and paperback as well?
It came out this year in Spanish and paperback.
And so both versions will be available here in Las Cruces at Barnes & Noble?
Yes. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, independent bookstores. I tell you, independent bookstores have been the backbone of the success of Midnight in Mexico. I mean, they've just been incredible. Bookstores, I'm hoping to do a talk with Lauren this year in Las Cruces. I think it would be great, you know. And Lauren is one of these, not just an amazing editor, but also an amazing reporter. And I think this region is lucky to have her in Las Cruces.
Thanks, Alfredo.
And what have you reported about, Lauren?
I'm still getting to know the region, although I do have a history with El Paso and Juarez. But here in New Mexico, I've done some work about immigration, about the Border Patrol. Certainly, the waste isolation pilot plant in Carlsbad with the radiation leak has been a major topic of coverage. But I cover everywhere from Lordsburg to Carlsbad to Silver City and Roswell. So I'm looking forward to continuing to meet people in the region and get to know the stories that are important here.
Well, I'll have to get you back on Puentes. And after the baby is born, you're due when?
September 24th, yes.
So we'll have to have you back on Puentes. You get to know more about Las Cruces and the area. Alfredo, coming back to your book, is there a new book in the offing?
Is it
a secret with you and Lauren?
Well, we've been talking about that. Actually, my agent has been very interested in getting another book out. I always tell people I think it's too early to talk about Daybreak or mourning in Mexico. But I think there are other issues to explore that have to do with Mexico, whether it's the Mexico in the United States or the Mexico just south of the border. But definitely, I want to do another book. It's really, I think when the book came out, I didn't know this was going to be such a long tour, you know. And that's a big success to the editors, to people like Lauren, and to the story itself. But I also think it forces you to kind of take a step back and say, you know, it touches key people on both sides of the border. I mean, I'm always fascinated by just regular Americans who want to know more about Mexico, but also young Mexican Americans who come out and it's, you know, this one person came up to me and said, I feel like I'm out of the closet and I can now say that I am partly Mexican. I am Mexican and I want to learn Spanish and I want to listen to Mexican music.
So is this what the book inspired them to feel?
And I don't know whether they got too close to the book and they were able to smell the tequila, because it did involve a lot of tequila and involve a lot of music. But I think when that happens, you feel like it was worth the experience. I mean, it was worth going through this. And oftentimes, I mean, I keep saying it can be very tiring, flying here, flying there. But I think when you have that kind of audience, you feel like you're playing an important role.
Well, definitely a very significant thing is going to be a movie. When will that come out? And what is it going to focus on, you or Mexico?
I am Mexico. I am the United States. I'm that bridge. I'm that puente. It was bought by Canana, people who just made Cesar Chavez, the movie, and they're making several other projects. I was very flattered that they were interested because they're from Mexico, but I think they understand the importance of connecting both sides, connecting the dots. And again, it's a company owned by Pablo Cruz, Diego Luna, and Gael Garcia Bernal. As far as the timing, I mean, once you sign the movie rights, it's really in their hands. They seem very serious. They've been very communicative since they purchased the rights. And I have all the confidence in the world that the movie will be done. I mean, two things I hate to speculate is on the timing, because I have no idea. This is the first time I've ever gone through this. But also the other question people ask me is, who will play you? And in Mexico City, at one point, Diego Luna was next to me, and they said, you know, who's going to play him? And this journalist said, well, Diego Luna. And I said, well, there's a problem. You know, Diego Luna is way too good looking and way too young to play me. But, I'll leave it up to Canana. I mean, I did the book, and it's really their movie script now.
So we look forward to that, as well as now being able to purchase the book. And it's on paperback at a local bookstore here, Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. Again, Midnight in Mexico by Alfredo Corchado. Thank you very much for joining us on Puentes. And also his editor, Lauren Villagran, who's the Border Bureau Chief Reporter for the Albuquerque Journal. Thank you.
Emily, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure to be
back.
Thank
you.
So the interview is on Puentes at krwg.org. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.